From Hollywood, California. Connecticut. It's the Mike and Oscars.
Thank you. And we're back. Welcome, everybody, to the first annual Mike and Oscars award show. The award season isn't over until we say it is, and we are putting a bow on all things 2017 year in film. Today, I am your host, Mike. This is my co-host, also Mike.
He literally straightened up in his chair and like made out like he was waving to a crowd of cheering fans.
You have to sell the bit. You have to sell the bit.
Everybody's got a process.
We are in our tuxes. We have walked the red carpet to the paparazzi, and we're ready to present all 24 kind of awards that the Academy Awards just did last Sunday, a week from Sunday. I don't know what day it is. Yes. I kind of lost count.
Last Sunday.
Fine enough. And so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to give you our 2017 year-end review. We're going to give out awards and our top five lists. Best Picture will be top 10, but top five lists for our seven major categories, maybe eight. We'll see how adapted screenplay plays out. And then we're going to go through a rundown of the other technical awards on the undercard, telling you what should have been nominated and should have won. We've been building this program pretty much for 2 months now, and this is kind of our crescendo.
I've been recording a Google document with this, basically the format for this episode in it all year round for the last 10 years.
Yes.
Because I'm the biggest nerd on the planet.
If movies weren't around for you, I sincerely fear what you would do with your
time.
Well,
when Mike asked me to do this podcast, I was like, all right, I'm ready.
Yes!
It's just something, you know, me and friends and family, we just always did, because we're nerds.
Couldn't have asked for a better partner. I've said it multiple times, but we want to get you guys looking forward to what else we have on the Mike and Oscar radar. Just because the Oscars are over does not mean we are. We got a couple things in the pipeline for you. Obviously, this is the Mike and Oscars award show. We've been pumping this one up in your brains for a little bit, so hopefully you've already been looking forward to it, and if not, tell your friends, settle in, you should be in for a couple laughs today, or just a couple things, yes.
Laugh.
And enough
you probably
to get
had it
you
already.
Outraged on. Marjorie Prime going to be a big part of my...
Oh, my God. He didn't want to record yesterday because he had to watch Marjorie Prime and what was the other one?
That's shaping the context a little
Christian
bit of what
Stewart
happened.
Christian Stewart movie?
Personal Shopper.
Oh, my God.
Which will show up, seriously. but also in the pipeline, we have a couple movie event type podcasts that we like doing. We are eyeing right now in a couple weeks Isle of Dogs as well as Steven Soderbergh's Unsane. We might do both of those in the movie events. We might just do one. We got to hash that out. It is March Madness, obviously, sweeping the country. Mike and I, big basketball guys. This should shock none of you. I am a UConn alum. Mike is a Fordham alum. Kevin Ollie just got fired today, so there's a little...
Upsetting.
Well,
I always rooted for UConn basketball.
Yeah, of course.
Even when
you
Fordham
did. You
wasn't
did.
A great basketball school, even though I went to some MAC tournaments back in the day.
Good old FU. I always like that
old
about
Rams, your
score.
Man. Derek Wittenberg. Derek? Oh, boy. Wittenberg was our coach.
The guy who fired.
Who shot the air ball that in the Jimmy Valvano game, and the other guy put it in.
The NC State game. There's your claim to fame, yeah. Valvano running around looking to hug someone. Yeah, we're going to be doing some kind of March Madness, some kind of basketball best of list. It's going to be one of our fun podcasts. We're still trying to unwind from the Oscar sprint that took us up to the Academy Awards, so trying to keep things a little less serious until we get more serious with things on the horizon, such as our year in preview, 2018. We're going to have a way too early Oscar selection. Clayton Davis in Awards Circuit just had his release a week ago, just after the Oscars, and we were kind of batting around a similar idea, so nice to see his out there, and you can contrast ours with him and see if we have any overlaps or any picks that are aligning in the industry. And we have other big events on the horizon, too. We're going to be doing something with the Avengers coming up at the end of April. That's going to be a big landmark episode for us.
Yes, sir.
We're going back into the retrospective pool. We're probably going to talk about some big Oscar upsets and get ready for another look back in Oscars history like we did. You can go back in our library in the early episodes. We have 1987 Best Lead Actress, 1997's
Those
Best
are fun,
Picture,
yes.
2001 Best Director, all kinds of categories covered for you guys. Going to pick that back up.
A lot of trends that you saw build up into this Academy Awards. And, of course, we'll have all the, you know, harebrained theories. We'll have all the Hollywood news kind of factoring in, as well as our production notes and our cast and crew bios. So we kind of, you go deep on each movie that we review, even if we review it in like a 15-minute period instead of a full episode like with our retrospectives that we've done. So either way, we kind of give you an info drop, and we also give you a review. And we're trying to avoid spoilers. spoilers for you. So we're trying to make these more listener friendly.
Yes.
We got a new tact for these retrospectives going forward, I think. And, you know, they should be listenable year round, whenever.
Yeah, we spent kind of since November. So like the last 4 months, three, four months in there getting you ready for the Academy Awards on March 4th. Those have come and gone. So now Oscar kind of takes not a back seat, but he slides off to the side. He's always in the prism of what we're going to be talking about.
Right.
But now we're going to concentrate on some other movies with always keeping an eye towards next year's Academy Awards. But obviously those are far enough off in the future where
Definitely.
We can play around a little bit and maybe give you guys some easier listening stuff to start.
It'll be a good mix. Yeah, it'll be a good mix.
Yeah, for sure.
I do want to just give one call back again. If you're just coming to us now, or if you're discovering us upon this episode, do look back at our backlog of episodes. We have reviews for each one of the nominees in the Big Seven categories. Those are our Oscar Sprint profiles. It's around 20 movie reviews,
20 episodes,
even though we've
yeah.
done more than 20 with our movie events, Black Panther, Star Wars, Cloverfield Paradox, and the Super Bowl stuff. We also reviewed each one of those categories at the Oscars, those Big Seven, for acting, screenplay, director, and picture. So that you can, you know, get more of a cross section. If you don't want to just look at one movie, you want to look at a bunch, you know, you can go back and just plan your movie night based on, you know, your workday podcast, your commuting podcast, and with us.
Yeah, it's an Oscars centric podcast. It's an award season podcast, but it's also one that we hope will help the listener out in their everyday life and seeing these movies and having a more refined taste in film, which is why I'm going to be talking specifically about Marjorie Prime and only Marjorie Prime.
The Marjorie Prime
throughout
has
the duration
become a
of
thing
this episode.
Now. Yeah, I'm
maybe some Legion. We'll see if we get to it.
Legion. Yeah, another inside joke for no one. From episode 3, 1961, Best Key Grip Award podcast.
So let's get started with the Mike, and Oscars Award Show, the final award show
is.
Of your
that
season.
That was our monologue.
That's it.
Oh, God. At least we were political.
You all know about Trump, right? Trump? Hey. Our big year in review, this is going to act as a big 2017 year in review. We take the 24 Academy Awards categories. We're going to pass comment on all of them at least. And then once we hit those big seven categories, we're going to give you our top fives and top 10. Everybody loves lists, so that's what we got plenty of them for you guys today. But let's start. Mike had the luxury of seeing most of these nominated films for sure that the Academy went through.
I missed a couple, but yes, most of them.
And so he's going to be the professor in terms of taking us through the undercard here, and I'm going to just set these on a tee for him, and he'll run with the ball because I like combining sports analogies, so none of them make sense.
Cool.
Let's start. The first category, Best Visual Effects. This was one won by Blade Runner 2049 at the Academy Awards. What do we have at the Mike, and Oscar, the first winner?
I rewatched Blade Runner, and my choice is Blade Runner 2049.
So now you were all about War for the Planet of the blah, 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 blah. A lot of prepositional phrases in that
sure.
title. You change your mind all of a sudden.
I rewatched Blade Runner on my TV, and it still looked absurdly good. So again, I kind of OD'd on Blade Runner in one weekend. I saw it twice in IMAX in the same weekend. Hadn't seen it since, and it holds up nicely. I really enjoyed it, but the visuals, they just pop. Denis Villeneuve and of course Roger Deakins, they give you everything you want. And visual effects, I mean, when they do go for it, especially on the other city, the other LA, oh my God, when Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling are on the screen there in that sand city, it's nothing looking better this year. So yes, visual effects was Blade Runner for me.
Also Jared Leto in that's a gi or a muumuu.
The worst part of that movie. Yes.
How dare you? 30 Seconds to Mars liked one of our Twitter posts. They're huge fans now. Film editing is where we'll go next. Also, Mike, what do we have for the winner of the MMO's film editing?
It's Baby Driver. It's Baby Driver because it was a
what
music
a
video. It's a music
what
video.
What a shock.
It's a two-hour-long music video that they actually sync up the scenes to the music.
Certainly it was a unique take on the Getaway caper movie.
I loved it, and I got to give it props there for editing. I thought they just kind of did an Oscar puzzle, little mini Oscar puzzle theory-influenced move by giving it to Dunkirk, which was very solid, but I don't think the Dunkirk editing was on the same level or is to the same complexity.
It's the award that put Dunkirk in second place on the night. Shape of Water walked home with four Oscars, and Dunkirk took home three, most awarded film. Be on the lookout. Back in episode one, Mike picked Baby Driver as his number one movie, which would have won the MMO's Best Picture for him.
We'll see if that
holds up. Costume design is where we'll go next, and I can't imagine this is anything but Phantom Thread.
It's Phantom Thread.
Yeah, that's about right.
Mark Bridges did a great job.
When you have a movie about a seamstress starring Daniel Day-Lewis.
Each one of those dresses is like a character. And I'm wearing sweats right now. This is not who I am. I'm not a fashionista or whatever.
No, but he has started wearing a monocle.
Fashionister?
No, that's it. You nailed both of those are politically correct.
But yeah, I don't care about fashion, as if anyone's seen me in person. So this movie made me care somewhat about fashion. I can't get over it.
The inside of that seam on your hoodie, it's going to tell like your life story going around the bend.
It says podcast master inside my hat.
I miss my hair. That was a low blow. I'm sorry. I'll take that out.
I still got some hair going on.
You're
here.
Better than your brother.
Yes, it's ever thinning, but
we'll go to makeup and hairstyling. This was one obviously that went to Darkest Hour. Also, Mike, where are we going?
The Post. I'm just kidding. It's not going to the Post.
Specifically, Tracy Letts's wig.
Just kidding. That gets to my Razzie. Darkest Hour wins here.
If you have no idea what that is in reference to, I implore you to go back and listen to our Post Oscar Sprint profile. Also, Mike does about a 20-minute dialogue about how awful the wigs in that movie are. You want to give a two-word synopsis on Meryl Streep's wig in that movie?
Darth Vader helmet.
Darth Vader, of course, being one word. So Darkest Hour is the winner for that. Also won the Oscar. No surprise there. That's kind of something that also Mike and I talked about prior to hitting record today. A lot of these, they might sound repetitive because these are actually, especially for the undercard, the ones that the Oscars ended up winning the Oscars in the same category. But we talked, and that's kind of an attribute to the Oscars. They got it right in a lot of those places.
Yeah.
And that's going to also hold over for the bigger awards, too. We think they got a lot of the nominations right. We just happen to disagree with some of the winners in the big categories.
Some variety, some shockers that you're going to get mad at us for or love us for. I don't know which. Rolling a dice.
Well, here's a good idea. Let's start with one of those shockers. Production design for you was?
Thor Ragnarok.
There you go.
Those two money shots, when they make the action scene, especially in flashback, look like what's on the Asgard Palace wall. I mean, it just shows all the money. It shows the $200 million that they put into it, especially when you see it on the big screen. I can't get over how good that looked. And yes, cinematography is very strong in that movie as well. I considered it, but to me, you have a space opera on display there, and you go to all these little weird planets. You got all these different kind of eye candy going on.
Does that go more to production design, or should that be more best effects?
No, it's production design, because you're bouncing around planet to planet, from Earth to Asgard to this Jeff Goldblum planet to all the different parts of that place. I just loved it. I thought it was brilliantly done, and I think production design at the Oscars goes more towards the independent movies when it should not.
That
should
be an obvious. That one was a Shape of Water winner. We talked about
that. I mean, it's very good.
Like Hollywood. Yeah. Production design was my Shape of... I wanted Shape of Water to win that one because of the old Hollywood feel and the old movie theater and that whole blending of those worlds. And a Jeff Goldblum planet sounds like my own personal hell.
Cinematography.
Best cinematography is next. Blade Runner 2049 won this one at the Academy Awards.
It is Blade Runner 2049, the best IMAX experience I had all year, which is saying a lot because I had one of the best IMAX experiences I've ever had at Dunkirk. So,
and at Star Wars when I sat in your lap and your brother sat in my lap on your lap.
Very true.
The seats are way too close together. We'll go to some of the technical ones involving sound and some of the shorts. We'll start with sound mixing for a film this year.
The best mix was Baby Driver. Again, music video.
Handing out those awards.
Mixing the
Got
music.
Got a biased academy here.
Yeah, that's for sure. Sound editing would be Dunkirk because they created a lot of sound effects without those, with those IMAX cameras not being able to record sound as well. It sounds like a war. It freaks you out when you're there and seeing it on the IMAX screen. So I was in awe of that. And so I thought it should have been split at the Academy, but Oh, well.
How about original song? That's got to go to Coco, right? Everybody loved that Coco song.
No, it's Ridiculous. The Greatest Showman.
Of course it's The Greatest Showman.
This Is Me.
Ugh.
It's an anthem. It's a song that I've listened to
As
an embarrassing amount.
As time has passed since last Sunday, I've grown more upset with This Is Me not winning than Get Out not winning Best Picture. That is such an Oscar song through and through. I don't is it because Greatest Showman was so disappointing? Had the La La Land guys writing the songs for it? Did it not meet expectations?
I wonder if it was there was an oversaturation with it. Like, people listened to it too much. Especially because it's on the radio and
whatnot.
Lack
of Miguel and confetti. Needed more Miguel and confetti, maybe?
It's possible.
Ugh, This Is Me should have won.
They structured the whole movie around that dang song, so it makes sense there. But
I'll have more to say about Coco later. Mm-hmm. Best original score. This better go to Hans Zimmer.
It's going to Hans Zimmer.
Damn
and
right
Dunkirk.
It is.
There's no question. It's a character in the movie, and to talk about a movie being built around a score, this one was.
One of the ones I saw last night, not a great movie, but The Discovery, I thought had a really impactful score. It's a Netflix original. I know you weren't a fan of the movie overall.
I have no memory of that
score. Yeah, it's not, you know, I probably will forget it in a couple of weeks, but I just wanted to make note of the score because they really, it gets so intense. It puts you on the edge. Reminded me in some ways of Dunkirk. Obviously, won't be as memorable, like I said, but that was Danny Bensi and Sonda Jurians. Also want to make note of Stephen Prince for Baby Driver, John Williams, obviously, for The Last Jedi could have been up there. Johnny Greenwood, Phantom Thread.
Yeah.
Really surprised you didn't pick that one.
A lot of good scores this year.
Yeah, it was.
I had to stay with Hans Zimmer.
We were spoiled this year in a lot of overall ways with movies that the Oscars don't have as many plainly enjoyable films as they do every year.
Raised their game this year.
Yeah,
yes.
I do too. Again, disagree with some of the winners, but we'll get into it. Animated short.
It's Garden Party. It's
and
the
you did,
Frogs.
You did. You said this previously, but you sat through all these. I did not have a chance.
Not only did I sat through them in a theater, I ordered them on Amazon Prime, which you can, or I bought it on Amazon Prime for $8.
You going to want that money back?
Maybe. I didn't know. I'm glad I own it now instead of, you know, but at least it's $8. You can only see three of the animated shorts, which is kind of upsetting. You got all five live action, which are a lot. Some of them are very, very sad, but they're all well done. So you tip your hat to these folks. So just be ready for more live action. But you do get three of the animateds.
So Garden Party was the one with the frogs.
The one with the frogs, man. It was just lifelike, and it had a funny story, even though it's kind of leading up to one thing, but it's fine. I enjoyed it.
One of Mike's happiest moments was when we were watching the Academy Awards on ABC, and they did the animated short category, and they showed the little snippet, the preview for each selection, each nominee. And when Garden Party came up, he proclaims, points at the TV, look at those frogs! Look how real those frogs look!
Looks like real frogs!
They did, in fact,
yes, they
look
did.
Like real frogs. So I will. If that's the basis for the award, then yes, Garden Party should win.
I like this story, too. It was good.
Best use of frog. Live action short is where we'll go next.
It's the 11 o'clock.
Again, you've seen these, you've digested them.
It's innovative. I mean, it's the only comedy of the group, because the other four are the furthest from a comedy, for sure. Yeah, it's the 11 o'clock. It's funny.
And that's the one, that's the shrink one?
Should I give away the premise?
Yes. I'm not even going to argue with it.
It's about a psychiatrist in his office getting ready for his first appointment of the day. He has a temp.
Yes.
So he has a new secretary. And she proclaims to him that his first appointment of the day is a delusional patient who thinks he's a psychiatrist.
That is a genius premise. That is such a good premise.
So that psychiatrist walks into the room thinking he, you know, runs the place. That's his office. And they basically just, yeah, it's funny. It's like a who's on first thing.
My apologies to the makers of that, because that sounds like it came right from my brain, and I have to see it.
Oh, you still should see it. Yeah, it's where when it comes on Stars or something on demand, maybe you don't have to buy it right now on Amazon like I did, but you should watch it.
You're just supporting the live-action short filmmakers.
Very good. Watu Wote was excellent. But yes, I'm going with the 11 o'clock.
We'll move to best documentary short subject first before we cover the big ones.
I only seen two. I'm sorry. Traffic Stop was the best of the two. So I'm going to go with Traffic Stop. I think I said Traffic Jam on the last pod. I didn't see Traffic Jam on the 405 or Heaven is a Traffic Jam on the 405. I'm sorry.
So this was Heaven is a Traffic Jam on the 405.
Correct.
The one that I correctly predicted.
You correctly predicted
because
it.
The Academy have seen none of these.
No, the Academy has seen none of these.
They just know the 405 is a freeway in L.A.
Correct,
and they're all in LA.
You like me, you know, patting you on the back, don't you?
Yay!
You got it right. Yeah, you nailed it. They don't watch them.
No,
they picked Kobe, and they picked 405.
And I'm not going to criticize them because I didn't get around to seeing the live action short, the documentary shorts either. I mean, so documentary feature. I did see a couple of these. You had?
I've seen a lot of these, and Last Men in Aleppo is my favorite.
That seemed to leave a big impact on you.
It was my highest rated on the year. It was an 88 B+. It moves you. And I've seen City of Ghosts, Cries from Syria. It's the most moving of these three. It follows around the White Helmets, who are just heroes, unadulterated heroes. Inarguably, they are heroes right now in Syria.
So better than Faces Places?
Better than Faces Places, more meaningful. I mean, I gave Faces Places a B+.
Better than Get Me Roger Stone.
Yeah.
Better than...
Get Me Roger Stone shook me to the bone.
It is a terrifying documentary.
Yeah.
Better than Jim and Andy.
I think so. I mean, Jim and Andy, they don't have as much as a through line. They kind of get a little scattered, you know, in my opinion, in terms of narratives go.
So fair enough.
I went with Last Men in Aleppo.
We have three more before the Big Seven, and one of those is adapted screenplay, so we'll probably pull that one out a little longer. But animated feature, we'll go first, obviously.
It's Coco. And Coco meant a lot to me while I was watching it. I mean, I don't know if it's a movie you rewatch 100 times, but it moved me. I can't believe it. I mean, it's this movie about something I don't know much about in Mexican folklore, and it's a movie about based on that song Remember Me, and mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very well done.
It was a big year for animated features too. Ferdinand, I didn't see, but that was out there. Boss Baby got nominated for the Oscar, but it was an entertaining movie, if nothing else. Lego Batman movie was out there. Lego Ninjago movie. Those Lego movies are always critically acclaimed now. Coco was out there. So it was a couple actual big animated movies.
Pixar still crushes it, though. They really do.
It's so bizarre, too, because they raise the bar so much every time they put something out that when something isn't as good as, like, Toy Story 2 or 3, it comes off as a disappointment when, really, it's one of the best animated features of all time still.
And yes, Coco is crushing it in the worldwide box office. It did very well here also, but it's crushing it worldwide, yeah. So I'm happy for him.
We'll go to foreign language film will be the last of the quote-unquote undercard.
I usually see these every spring after they've been out for a while. It's kind of hard to cram these in because
they get limited releases on stage.
They don't come to us in Connecticut as much. They're just starting to over these last 2 weeks. And those theaters don't have except MoviePass, so here I am. Right. So I'm going to go with First They Killed My Father. It's still the highest rated. We reviewed it on our Netflix Year in Review of 2017 in terms of those original movies. Angelina Jolie crushes it. I thought she does a great job in terms of her directing, and it's very well acted. The cinematography's out of this world.
Especially that last scene. I wasn't crazy about the film overall, but that last scene is very cinematic, that overhead shot that they leave you with, and it's very impactful, very emotional. It's harrowing.
Moved me. Moved me as well. Another one.
So we'll start with the Big Seven, except we're going to do Big Eight, even though, again, we saw most of the movies, but the books were another thing about, you know, the whole reading and the words with the learning. We don't do that. What we do is watch. So we'll talk about Best Adapted Screenplay. Obviously, everyone and their mother had Call Me By Your Name for this one. And what did you have?
I also have Call Me By Your Name. I thought a lot about Thor Ragnarok. I thought that was a great script. I thought a lot about Logan. I thought a lot about The Disaster Artist because I actually read that audiobook, and it was amazing how much they had to change. But just I hadn't read Call Me By Your Name, but I've talked about it on the pod before. And go back, listen to our Call Me By Your Name episode to see exactly what they changed in that adaptation process. It was a lot. They took out the voiceover narration. They had to take the plot line and just focus it like crazy into that one summer. So props to James Ivory, and he was well-deserved and long overdue.
Yeah, it probably would have been between Call Me By Your Name and The Disaster Artist. Interesting to see what would have happened if The Disaster Artist didn't have what happened to it in James Franco's allegations against him and see how that would have stood up. Call Me By Your Name, James Ivory, based on the novel by Andre Aciman. Disaster Artist, Scott Neustrader and Michael H. Weber, based on Greg Sestero, Tom Bissell novel. Spider-Man Homecoming was an adapted screenplay. I wanted to give that a shout-out, too, because there were huge stakes for that reboot.
I also love the screenplay for Wonder. I thought that was very innovative, and I know they did it in a novel, which is on my wish list on Amazon to read. I love the structure of that story.
Yeah, I want to give a shout-out to it with that.
Sure. How did they wrangle those?
Carrie Fukunaga and Chase Palmer.
Those 9,000 pages.
Gary Dauberman. Yeah.
That was the longest book.
It set up not only the adaptation from a horror screenplay, story, book, whatever. It's a Stephen King novel, obviously. But also a horror reboot, how to reboot a franchise.
Yes.
One of the most well-done pure horror films I had seen in a long time.
Sure.
Not including Get Out, which
good choice.
Crosses many genres.
Yeah, if we had to pick nominations for that category, it'd be harder than you'd think.
It would. There was a lot of good ones. Like I said, spoiled year for us as movie watchers and moviegoers, for sure. But that'll bring us to the big seven categories.
Yeah, here we are.
And these are the ones that we spent the majority of our time, the majority of the last 3 or 4 months, honing in on, focusing on, debating, beating around a lot. And we're ready to put these categories to bed, tuck them in, and ship them off and say goodbye to the year 2017. And we're going to start with Best Original Screenplay. Now, Mike and I, for these seven categories, each have a list of 5 through 1. These are the ones we think should have been nominated on the year and are worthy of the 5 best original screenplays and every category they're on of 2017. So Mike will go first, reading you his 5 through 1.
And the nominees for Best Original Screenplay for Also Mike... Noah Baumbach for the Meyerowitz stories. Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird. Rian Johnson for Star Wars The Last Jedi. Kumail Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon for The Big Sick. Jordan Peele for Get Out. I would say an honorable mention would be Martin McDonagh for 3 Billboards. I replaced Shape of Water and 3 Billboards with Rian Johnson Star Wars, which I thought was brilliantly written.
I think you just divided our audience.
I know, I know, because that movie was very polarizing for a lot of people.
We both liked it. We both liked the directions that Johnson went in. Very daring.
And he set things up so well. Like the big twists he wanted to make on that plot line. Mm-hmm. It really took Star Wars into a new direction. Just putting on a clinic in how you do a big blockbuster movie. Star Wars The Last Jedi, as I'll say later, gave you something unexpected. So if you kind of want to go into a Star Wars movie like it's comfort food, then that's not what you're going to get necessarily. But yes, I substituted Shape of Water and 3 Billboards for Star Wars The Last Jedi and the Meyerowitz stories, which I thought was comic writing, not to perfection, but just so smartly done.
Very high
they got
quality.
Characters literally talking past each other for most of that script. That has to be on the page. And it's just so oblique in terms of the dialogue writing. So the dialogue is just such a highlight for me there. Yes, it has He Who Shall Not Be Named.
One of the many he's in Hollywood.
Yes, correct. So that poo-pooed it with audiences worldwide and certainly with the Academy. But yes, Noah Baumbach just putting on a clinic on how to write a comedy. And I kind of go for comedies anyway. So those are my 5. I would still vote for, at the end of the day, I'm still going to go with Jordan Peele for Get Out.
Tough to vote against that one. And you and I actually did have the same number 1. Some honorable mentions for me that I'm going to get into. Not Shape of Water, because I liked it better in 1991 when it was done as Beauty and the Beast. Or as in 1980-something when it was Splash and Tom Hanks' movie.
It is so similar to Splash.
Okja could have been up there for me. Dunkirk was a tough omission. Baby Driver, your favorite. I had to leave off.
Cool.
My 5, Oliver Assayas. If I'm saying that wrong, I apologize. Personal Shopper. I really did like the movie. I thought it was a really unique way and a unique twist on the ghost story that kind of wasn't a thriller, wasn't a horror, was just more of a coming-of-age story.
It's adapted from the Kristen Stewart novella.
You're doing really well.
No, it's not adapted. Whatever.
I really did enjoy Personal Shopper. My number 4 was I, Tonya, Stephen Rogers. The weaving in of all those different plot lines and stories and the presentation of whether it did or did not happen, leaving
so
it up to the
viewer. So if it's adapted from untrue stories, it doesn't count.
Is it adapted from interviews? Is that adapted?
I don't think the Academy knew how to handle it.
Another one they probably didn't know how to handle it, but the Razzies seemed to. Mother by Darren Aronofsky, my number 3.
That was original, yes.
I'm in love with that movie more than other people.
Even though you could make an argument it's adapted from perhaps the best-selling book of all time in the history of man.
Which also could be fiction. We don't know.
It doesn't matter.
It's two altar boys. Yeah.
Fiction.
My number two, also Big Sick, Kumail Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon, actually got me to like and respect the rom-com. And number one, Get Out, Jordan Peele. Jordan Peele and Get Out is going to go down for me as one of the biggest accomplishments, I think, in movie history, just through the degree of difficulty with every aspect of that film.
It's the year of Get Out.
And how he pulled it off.
It's the year of Get Out.
Yeah, it might be. It should have been. It should have been in the Oscars, too. And I feel like that's a missed opportunity.
At least he got this one. We were pretty hyped for
Yes, absolutely. We go from original screenplay to, of course, best supporting actress as we start off with the not-so-leading ladies, the secondhand ladies that made the films what they are in their roles. I will start, since you started the last one. Honorable mentions for me, it was a lot of them. We said all throughout our build, since episode one, that Best Supporting Actress was going to be a loaded category.
Right.
This gives us a chance to kind of put a spotlight on that. My honorable mentions, Tatiana Maslany from Stronger, Michelle Williams, if she isn't in a supporting actress, All the Money in the World. Laurie Metcalf, Lady Bird, didn't make my top five. Octavia Spencer, Shape of Water, didn't make my top five. Tiffany Haddish for Girlship, of course, was a Golden Globe nominee. Betty Gabriel and Allison Williams, I thought both from Get Out, both played their parts to perfection. I mean, you hated and loved them both at different times throughout that movie, which was the point. Lois Smith from Marjorie Prime, she was great.
Everybody says she was great.
I've seen that movie.
And I just fell asleep, I think. she was very good. Yeah.
And Sophia Lillis from It. Again, you heard a lot of these movies already from me, but Sophia Lillis, to me, was how you write a feminist hero in the wake of what Wonder Woman wanted to be. But we'll get to Wonder Woman, at least from my rankings, later on. My top five, Elizabeth Marvel from The Meyerowitz Stories. She was neurotic. That is absolutely a character. I loved her. I thought she played it great. I almost went Emma Thompson from that same movie because I think she's absolutely hysterical too. But Elizabeth Marvel had to play with such these comedic titans and play everything so straight-laced, seeing, saying, and watching all these absurd things happening around her. I know the Meyerowitz Stories might touch a nerve for some people because also might just explain there's Dustin Hoffman in it. It's not for everybody. But if you can stand watching a film with him in it, you should watch that. It has high, high comedic value. My number four, Mary J. Blige in Mudbound. We've talked about time and again. I think her redefining or correctly defining what a supporting character should be and killing it in the background of scenes should not go unnoticed and unrecognized. Allison Janney for I, Tonya won the Academy Award. She was my number three. I've preached all year long how Holly Hunter, it was an outrage. She wasn't nominated. She was my number one forever and ever and ever. She finishes at my number two because Leslie Manville is my number one.
Woo!
And that scene they showed at the Oscars where she just stares straight forward and is ripping a hole into Reynolds Woodcock at the breakfast table. It gives me chills. I have goosebumps talking about it right now. It was an unbelievable scene. She should have won the Oscar. I'm sorry, Allison Janney.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You went with the Phantom Thread. Mike is a PTA guy now.
Yes.
So I would agree with a lot of your honorable mentions. I would also mention Hong Chow for Downsizing, Michelle Pfeiffer for Wizard of Lies, Ana de Armas from Blade Runner 2049, Catherine Keener from Get Out. But I had a lot of the same names on there as well. So my five nominees would be Tiffany Haddish for Girls Trip.
There you go.
Holly Hunter for The Big Sick, Allison Janney for I, Tonya, Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread, and Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird.
So winner didn't even make my top five.
My number six was Allison Williams from Get Out.
Yeah, I felt like she deserved way more award recognition. She played her part well.
And if I'm honest, I probably have Octavia Spencer, Maslany, and Blige probably next three. So I agree with you a lot. This was a loaded category.
Absolutely
all year
loaded.
Long. We had no idea until early on in the award season. But my winner, and it's been my number one forever, is Laurie Metcalf from Lady Bird.
You love the mom playing mom. You wanted to give the award to Mrs. Also Mike, the mother of Also Mike there.
No, she's like the complete opposite of my mom. Have you met my mom? No.
You love your mother. That's what Laurie Metcalf's joy or charm is in that scene. Like, yeah, she's rough around the edges, but she reminds everyone of their mother at some point. And that's why she was so dang good, because you see her and you're like, oh, that's mom.
You know, the scene at the end with that whole sequence, and she's the antagonist of the movie.
Yeah.
So I've talked about it to death, so I don't want to keep going, but I just been gushing over her for more than one podcast. Laurie Metcalf, I thought it was the best of the year.
We will move on. So you had Laurie Metcalf from Lady Bird. I took Leslie Manville from Phantom Thread. Those are the Mike and Oscar Award winners. Congratulations, ladies. Mm-hmm. You can swing by to pick up your trophies. Best Supporting Actor is where we will go next, and you could start.
So my nominees were Sam Rockwell from Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Michael Shannon from The Shape of Water, Rob Morgan from Mudbound, Armie Hammer from Call Me By Your Name, and Michael Stuhlbarg from Call Me By Your Name. My honorable mention number 6, and then I'll give you a few more. Sterling K. Brown from Marshall was my number 6. I had a lot of names in contention here, but I don't think this was as strong as a category as a ladies. I thought the Academy got it wrong, to be honest with you, but I did have Sebastian Stan from I, Tonya, Tom Hardy even from Dunkirk with
Tom
the little
eyes.
You know, certainly Woody Harrelson and Richard Jenkins were in my top 15s. Idris Elba from Molly's Game, Bryan sure. Cranston from Last Flag Flying. I love their performances. I also wanted to give a shout out to Benny Safdie from Good Time. He played the brother of Robert Pattinson. I just loved his work in that. So again, my nominees, Rockwell, Shannon, Morgan, Hammer, Stuhlbarg. And my winner is still, unfortunately, they got it right at the top, Sam Rockwell, Three Billboards
Still
outside
going
of me,
Sam Rockwell.
Ebbing, Missouri. Yes.
Was the Oscar winner. You agree with the Academy there. Wow, we have 4 of the 5 same ones. Hmm. And I didn't look at your nominees. I know I had the doc, but I didn't look it over.
Oh, cool.
My number 5 was Rob Morgan from Mudbound.
Nice.
My number 4 was Sam Rockwell. 3, I mentioned this in a tweet after my 4th, I think, rewatch. Peter Dinklage in Three Billboards is
good.
Amazing. He is amazing. I was so unrecognized.
Sure.
I didn't appreciate it my first couple times through, but man, you just watch what he does with his face and his words and his inflection going from one emotion to the next. He plays upset and then surprised about Baguette and then disappointed in Mildred all in 3 cut scenes at the same dinner. He was unbelievable. I thought he should have gotten more recognition.
Great cast, and yeah, he's awesome. He's Tyrion, man. He's forever
so
Tyrion.
He's
I love
so
him.
Good. My number 2 was my number 1 for a long time. You said it. The shorts, the dancing, Armie Hammer. Outrage, he didn't even make an Academy nomination.
We thought he was a shoo-in,
too. He was so good. Ugh. He was great in that movie. And my number 1 was Michael Shannon. He was just a dick among dicks
wow.
in Shape of Water. And I'm not a Shape of Water fan. I'm not crazy about it. Like we've said that over and over again. But I thought he deserved to be in there. The Hammer and Shannon, to me, are the 2 performances from this year. Yes, I agree it was an overall weak field. Those 2 performances could be supporting actors in any other year. Neither one was even nominated by the Academy. Blows my mind.
I think people might have been fatigued with him for getting nominated for Nocturnal Animals in a kind of villainous role
yeah,
or intimidating role
type.
The year
yeah,
before.
I could see that.
So that's probably why he didn't get as long of a look. Also, movies loaded with good performances. Richard Jenkins was very good. But we thought the field came back to everybody.
Yeah.
In terms of, so we thought it was a wide open category. And yeah, that makes some sense.
Some other honorable mentions for me. I already said Spider-Man Homecoming. Michael Keaton was a really good conflicted villain.
Sure.
And not 100% villain. Patrick Stewart from Logan. Colin Farrell from The Beguiled. I'm not a Colin Farrell guy, but he was really good in that movie. Willem Dafoe, obviously, from The Florida Project. Richard Jenkins, Shape of Water. Adam Sandler from The Meyerowitz Stories.
Yeah.
I was impressed with his performance.
Sure, yeah. And I think we both forgot to mention Christopher Plummer, but we both tipped our hat to
yes,
Christopher
yes,
Plummer during our review season.
He was good. We'll go to Best Lead Actor next. And these
start
are
us off, Mike.
The leading men of Hollywood. I have a feeling I know who your number 1 is. I'm not sure. I think he's my number 5, but my honorable mentions, Robert Pattinson for Good Time, Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name. Those are really, I mean, the leading men. I only had 7 names. Those were the 2 that didn't make the top 5. Otherwise, my number 5 was Daniel Day-Lewis from Phantom Thread. Mm-hmm. You're going to talk more about him, I imagine.
Sure.
Reynolds Woodcock. My number 4, I am so conflicted. I wanted to pull him off this list, but I left him on because I was a crazy performance, and he made it realistic enough. And I
know
I
what you're going
to
say.
Yeah, James Franco from The Disaster Artist. It was a really good performance. It was true to what we've seen from Tommy Wiseau throughout the award season, those ridiculous interviews he gives.
It was awarded. It was acclaimed for
yeah,
a long time there.
It was a good performance, regardless of what the man did. Maybe you shouldn't reward the man because of who he is. I don't know. Number 3, Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out. 2 was Jake Gyllenhaal from Stronger. Got no awards recognition. Played that movie. Had to play it without limbs. Had to play it as a paraplegic. I thought he did a great job.
There was some off notes in that performance, but we both gushed over it back when, even today. The movie had its flaws. Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, I'm not going to – you won't hear that again. I think Tatiana Maslany and Gyllenhaal were the only ones I had from Stronger. But Jake Gyllenhaal is great at everything he does.
Yeah, it annoys me. That Nightcrawler performance is still up there, man, for me.
Yeah, for sure. And my number one was Gary Oldman. I always said, great performance, above average movie. He was Winston Churchill.
Yeah, most people agree with you there, for sure. In terms of my nominees, I went with Daniel Day-Lewis from Phantom Thread, Gary Oldman from Darkest Hour, Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out, Timothy Chalamet from Call Me By Your Name, and like you said, Jake Gyllenhaal from Stronger.
Yeah, there you go.
My honorable mention, number six, was Robert Pattinson from Good Time.
I'm surprised you didn't have him ranked. You were carrying the torch for that movie.
I really liked what he did there, no question. It's just the big four from the Oscars for me carried over. I did want to mention James McAvoy in Split, Steve Carell in Last Flag Flying, Sam Elliott in The Hero, and you mentioned Hugh Jackman from Logan, and I also wanted to talk about Harry Dean Stanton in Lucky. He did a great job. Chadwick Boseman from Marshall, a movie that kind of got overlooked because of its subject matter in many ways. So a lot of names. I still go with the Academy for the most part on this one. The Denzel scene was phenomenal in Roman J. Israel. I just thought there wasn't much more than that one great scene in the middle of that movie, and that movie was so bad. And I love, like I said, I love the way Pattinson's career has gone. He could have easily sold out, but instead he's working with Cronenberg, Safdie Brothers. It's awful. It's awesome.
It's just terrible.
It's awesome. I can't read. It's awesome. And yeah, he's going places for sure. So
I'd like to see him play more wolves.
My award,
vampires.
Yeah, my award's going to Daniel Day-Lewis. I've been on the record.
You would have given him the fourth Oscar. So he has three Oscars and one Mike
yes,
Oscar.
To me, it's a masterclass. To me, he's doing 10 things more in every scene than Gary Oldman or anybody else working today. I think he's just at another level of sophistication. I think that movie should be seen again just for him, if not Man, Villain, Crepes. They're awesome.
Fair enough. So there you go. We have Daniel Day-Lewis and Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill, or Winston Churchill as Winston Churchill, as the two winners for the Mike and Oscars of the Best Lead Actor. Lead Actress will probably get a little more diverse. Again, the actress category, so many strong performances, that they kind of blew the two actor categories out of the water. I mean, the ladies killed it this year, and a big year for women overall.
It's a humongous paragraph for me of honorable mentions, but I'll get to my nominees first. Frances McDormand from Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Saoirse Ronan from Lady Bird, Margot Robbie from I, Tonya. I carried them over from the Oscars, and I don't apologize for it.
I have the same three.
Here's where I get different. Vicky Krieps from Phantom
loved
Thread.
Her.
Is
you
a
loved
nominee,
her.
Is a nominee for me. And Jennifer Lawrence. Yes, Jennifer Lawrence from Mother. I had to do it. I don't necessarily...
The correct pronunciation.
I don't love the movie, but I think highly of the performance. My honorable mention number six was Sally Hawkins, not in Shape of Water, but in Maudie. I thought she was terrific in Maudie. And I do have her Shape of Water performance in my top 15 as well. Judi Dench from Victoria and Abdul, Jessica Chastain from Molly's Game.
Of course.
I do have Streep noted here really high in the post. And Lily Collins.
Really? Wait a minute.
I do have her performance.
But she performed with the wig on the whole time.
Well, she's still that good.
Lily Collins have lost all credibility.
Lily Collins from To the Bone, a Netflix original.
Yes.
Florence Pugh from Lady Macbeth.
I couldn't even find room for Lily Collins in my letter. Yeah, completely.
Rooney Mara for Una. Deborah Winger for The Lovers. Michelle Williams, All the Money in the World. Anna Taylor-Joy from Split.
That's interesting. You put Michelle Williams numbers in your lead actress category. I put her in supporting actress because we don't know what the hell she was in that movie.
Right. But again, McDormand, Ronan, Robbie, Krapes, Lawrence were my nominees, and my winner this year is still Frances McDormand.
McDormand wins it. Wow.
I still went with McDormand. Like I said.
You can't argue with it.
It's tough. She's so good in that.
My honorable mentions actually kind of differ from yours quite a bit.
Cool.
Rebecca Hall, Professor Marsden in The Wonder Woman. She is
very good.
A stone cold killer.
Yes, sir.
I love Rebecca Hall is similar to Octavia Spencer in that she doesn't quite shift from what she does well, but it's because what she does well is so damn good in every movie. So they should play those characters forever, and they should be recognized for them. She was great in Professor Marston and Wonder Woman. Rachel Weisz in My Cousin Rachel, I didn't care for the movie all that much, but she was, you want to talk about a questionable character up until the end.
I hated that movie.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about the movie. Her performance, I thought, was really good.
Yes, it was.
Gal Gadot, however you want to pronounce it, in Wonder Woman. Again, I have my issues with the movie, but her performance, she was Wonder Woman. She was a star was born in that movie, and Justice League tried
Hero
to tear it down.
To the nth degree, no question.
Jessica Chastain for Molly's Game, you mentioned. Annette Bening, Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. Can we get Annette Bening an Oscar one of these years? That might be my new campaign.
I didn't see that one. I that's on my list.
She deserves to get some kind of recognition along the way here.
Yeah, the BAFTAs had her nominated. So
my top five, Personal Shopper left an impression on me. Kristen Stewart was my number five. I took the same three you did, Ronan, McDormand, Robbie, from the Oscars, and there's only two spots left. So Kristen Stewart was one of them. These were all heavy female-driven movies.
She's good in it. I'm not going to argue with you.
But you know what it is? That role that she plays in that movie, it's a moving ghost story, someone dealing with loss and a close friend. And you need to have the Kristen Stewart borderline apathetic, solemn performance. And that's what she brings to the table to all her characters. So I thought it played in really, really well. And you go with kind of the pseudo twist ending of it all.
Her persona worked.
I thought it was a really nice fit, really well done. So she was my number five. Robbie from I, Tonya. I wanted to put her as high as first. She's down to four in my final list. And I have to walk away from this category because I keep changing the rankings of those three
time. Yeah, it's tough.
Saoirse Ronan, who was my number one, finishes at number three. She was my number one when we did our best actress category review. I have her under McDormand here, who is my number two. My number one, the winner, and listen to me, everyone, you listen to me. Inarguably the best actress performance this year, Jennifer Lawrence in Mother. It's not a question. If you don't think so.
And our podcast is
come
to an
end. Stop it. If you don't think so, you didn't sit through the movie. Were just outraged at the bizarreness and you weren't watching the performance. Her performance in this movie. Imagine you going through what that movie had her character go through. Oh, she nailed every angle of what the fuck. Beautifully.
Very true.
She was the number one performance.
I can't believe you went with it, but I can't argue that she's one of the best of the year. I'll leave it at that. I think McDormand's better for me, but I'll leave it at that.
No, you're wrong, and so is everyone else. All right, let's move
on. Everyone else is going to argue with you here, my friend.
Bring it. Just bring it. I'm ready to go.
We'll get some audience reaction to this podcast. Here we go. You're going to go with Best Director, Mike.
Yeah, let's start with Best Director, where Guillermo del Toro is in my honorable mentions. He who won every award leading up to this. I had him at number five for a while, but on the heels of me filling out my Best Actress top five, specifically the top spot, I said, fuck it, giving number five to Darren Aronofsky for Mother. I love that movie. Fuck you.
Mike loves that movie.
So my honorable mentions...
He's Mike number one, by the way. I am also Mike, so send all your hate mail.
Just bring it. You fucking send that mail to me, and I will fuck it up.
Oh, God.
My honorable mentions who didn't make the top
five... We used to be safe for work.
Didn't make the top five. Luca Guadagnino, Call Me By Your Name. I can't believe I didn't have him on the list, but beautiful movie, totally unexpected. You were expecting another, basically a run-of-the-mill gay love story, and you got anything but... Guillermo del Toro was my second runner-up there for Shape of Water. Look, we give the movie a lot of hate, but it came right from his brain and his heart, and he was able to put it on screen and do it beautifully, and Fox Searchlight gave him all that rope to run with, and he obviously created a success story. The thing I liked least about it is that you're either borrowing, take the story aside and our gripes with it, the monster vision, you're either borrowing straight from the creature from the Black Lagoon, or you're borrowing straight from Abe Sapien, who Del Toro also created. You sort of had a hand in putting on film the first time.
The derivatives are obvious. Yeah. And something that Grace Randolph said about it that we've never really gone into is that she called it a shallow movie in terms of its thematics. That makes a lot of sense to me. And it, you know, it kind of goes river wide. It hits on a lot of things, but it just doesn't go deep.
And it goes, I think that's what we kept saying about the half measure part of it. You know, the message is everybody has value, love everybody, everybody equal.
Great message. It's just not.
It's just not, there's no depth to it.
There's no depth.
Which is ironic since we're talking about water.
Yeah.
Sean Baker for the Florida Project, dollar for dollar, probably the best performance this year. This is a point you brought up. I'm stealing it from you because I like it so much. I don't know if you put his budget up against anyone else's that any one director got more, especially with the backdrop he was dealing with that, you know, rinky-dink motel, all those characters in it. Beautiful movie.
Well, he's quote-unquote the iPhone guy, and Steven Soderbergh, a director as big as Steven Soderbergh, is shooting a movie with iPhone coming out at the end of this month.
Unsane, yeah.
Claire Foy.
Lee Unkrich for Coco. Again, it's unfair what Pixar does to itself, because if you don't have Up or Toy Story 2 or 3 or 1 back in the day, if you fall short of any of those hallmarks in our minds, it's not embraced as well as all the other ones, which isn't fair because Coco is a phenomenal movie.
They've set a crazy high standard. Yeah. You're right.
Andrew Muschietti, that's kind of for me. I loved it and the way that he was able to take a reboot. Reboot has turned into such an ugly word in Hollywood, and I'm glad something like this came along to kind of give it more hope.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a lot of hope. You know, $500 million or close to $1 billion will give people hope, yes.
And Dee Reese is my final honorable mention. A lot of honorable mentions, cool. But I couldn't decide between them. These were all people who at one point in time were in my top five.
Sure.
Dee Reese for Mudbound. Again, if that movie was just about the exploits of the Jackson family, I think she'd be probably number one or two on my list. Is what it is with the source.
Prowess, matter. Directing prowess. And she can give one hell of a speech, by the way.
Yes.
Watch that Indie Spirits, you know, replay.
Kills it. Number five, Aronofsky, like I said, for Mother. Number four, Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah.
Easy for me to say. Okja.
Go watch his older movies, too, man. I love his filmography.
And that's what I think made Okja so great. He's done stuff like The Host. He's used to dealing with these monsters, creatures that aren't really on set.
He's
and
the
pulling them off.
He's the Korean Del Toro,
And that's a great way of putting it. Yes, he is. Okja, I'm going to have more to say about it, which should give you a precursor of what's to come. Patty Jenkins in Wonder Woman. Now, listen, she's my number three. Again, I think it fell short of this great feminist explanation and feminist hero that we all thought that she gets praised for being. Not Patty Jenkins, but Wonder Woman itself in the movie. DC was so up against it on the heels of Batman v Superman. They needed a win. They needed something to break through to prove that they can compete with Marvel, that there was just as much love and just as much for their properties out there to make money for. And along comes Patty Jenkins, who crushed the delivery of Wonder Woman, certainly crushed the visuals of it.
Billion-dollar movie.
Billion-dollar movie, created its own franchise, reinvigorated, made a lot of money for Justice League, regardless of what happened in that movie. Hopefully going forward, they can rebuild the Wonder Woman character.
Maybe I'm a little soured on the fact that I thought Justice League really screwed up Wonder Woman's plot line.
Right. But the fact that Wonder Woman didn't, you know,
correct.
It kind of saved DC in a way. Not from bankruptcy or anything dire, but it made it competitive.
I just had such a problem with the finale of that movie. It kind of disqualified it for me. But
I
can't argue. Patty Jenkins has got a lot of chops, man.
Yeah, I just think she pulled off something pretty special. My top two, Degree of Difficulty City. I can't give everything to Jordan Peele, so that's why he's my number two for Get Out. Hmm. My number one is Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I he was my number one when we did our best director category review.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whoops.
He did a war movie that puts you on the edge of your seat because of the perfect score. It has three weaving in timelines, and it has very, very little dialogue. I screwed up and didn't put Greta Gerwig on my list, and she was supposed to be my first honorable mention. So there's that.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, we both gushed over a million times.
Yeah, I mean, she's great.
Cool. That makes sense. In terms of some best director honorable mentions that Mike didn't have, I'm going to mention Denis Villeneuve for Blade Runner 2049, the Safdie brothers, Benny and Josh for Good Time, Taika Waititi for Thor Ragnarok. He's another rising star.
I probably should have put him on.
He's a rising star. And I have Angelina Jolie up there for me.
Oh, yeah. Why not?
Yeah,
good for you.
Loved her work in that. And it's a director showcase, no doubt about it. My number six in terms of honorable mention was Rian Johnson. from Star Wars: The Last
Jedi. You love that movie, huh?
Love the movie. Yeah. Loved what he did with it. I mean, it's an auteur's, you know, vision. Even though it's, you know, a massive corporation behind him, they really gave him free reign. I mean, he sold them on his vision there. I'm shocked that he was able to write such a ballsy script, that he was able to direct it the way he did. So my five nominees are Jordan Peele for Get Out, Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, Edgar Wright for Baby Driver.
There it is.
Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread.
Yes.
And yes, Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird. Greta Gerwig, I'm super balanced construction. We all know I've been obsessed with PTA. Christopher Nolan and Jordan Peele, to me, are undeniable. Like you said, they're your top two, and I would agree with that. Edgar Wright, to me, that another director showcase. I'm more on that later. But I still have to give my award to what I gave it to back in the Best Director pod, Jordan Peele for Get Out. He's my number one. I would give him both director and screenplay.
So if you were the Academy of One, Peele was walking away with, at least at this point, director and screenplay.
I think it's walking away with two Oscars. Yeah,
yeah. I think it should have. I totally agree it should have.
If I was voting on the slate that was there and knowing that Phantom Thread really didn't have a chance, I would have voted for Greta Gerwig's screenplay, and I would have done an Oscar puzzle theory where I would have gave Peele the director and then picture.
So you would have gone against Del Toro if you were part of this year's Academy.
Right.
I can't argue with any of that. I mean, man, we're going to look back in 20 years. When we do the 2017 Best Picture retrospective.
We're on the record a lot.
Well, we better be right. But we're going to look back and we're going to say, man, I think we screwed up collectively. I think Shape of Water should have been a number two or a number three. And now, the moment you've all been waiting for, it's Best Picture time.
Top tens of the year coming. Yeah, it's Best Picture time.
So the Academy did nine, but no. The Mike and Oscars would never rob you of a spot. We are
top
doing
ten
the
plus.
Top 10 plus is a nice way of putting it. Best Picture nominees, 10 through 1. So also Mike is going to lead us off.
With a lot of honorable mentions. Because there's a lot of films that I really love this year.
We got
year.
Spoiled this year.
Absolutely. Last year I had like 28 B-pluses. This year I had 31. And that's out of 172 movies that I've seen this
let's
year.
See.
I'm a little crazy.
172. Good God, man. I have six that I listed as honorable mentions. Let's see if you nail them all. Go ahead.
Free Fire, Wind River.
Free Fire was terrible.
The Devil's Candy, An Inconvenient Sequel, Last Flag Flying, Mother, Disaster Artist, To the Bone, Molly's Game, Darkest Hour, Shape of Water, Florida Project, Last Men in Aleppo, The Meyerowitz Stories, First They Killed My Father, Good Time, Logan, It, Three Billboards, I, Tonya, and Spider-Man. That's me going from 31 all the way down to number 11.
You have named two of them, which makes me think the other four are in your top 10. Well, one of them may not be, but go ahead.
So my top 10, number 10, the Kumail Nanjiani speech applying here, because I'm not a gay man. I don't live in Northern Italy. Call Me By Your Name. I can't believe I love this movie as much as I did. That's a me problem, because it's a phenomenal film. And I live that Kumail Nanjiani quote. So that's my number 10 of the year.
Fair enough.
My number 9, the Denis Villeneuve technical marvel, that is Blade Runner 2049. The best IMAX experience of the year. My second best all time, I would say, to The Dark Knight when I saw that in New York City. Wow, that's an absurdly big IMAX, by the way. Maybe that's just the size of the theater. Science fiction cravings just quenched after watching that movie. It does have a good narrative to it. It does get some depth as well. Obviously, Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford as cool as ever. Love that movie. I wish it made more money, because I want Denis Villeneuve to make more movies like this with this amount of resources. He is a maestro, and his career, his filmography speaks to that. My number 8 is The Big Sick. I laugh consistently throughout. Great dramedy. I've mentioned it 1,000 times on our podcast. Another walking of a tightrope here in terms of juggling tones and themes. Love The Big Sick. That's my number 8. My number 7, again, Kumail Nanjiani quote applying, because I'm not female. I'm not from California. I haven't argued with Laurie Metcalf. Lady Bird is my number 7. Perhaps the best coming-of-age film in a long, long time. The grade that I gave it.
So this is also Mike's top 10 as told by Kumail Nanjiani. Yeah.
But the grade that I gave it would have been my number 1 film 2 years ago when Sicario was my number 1 film.
Wow.
So, honestly, these movies, like, we got spoiled this year. These A minuses, I usually get a couple once in a while in a good year. like I'm all the way down to A minuses at number 10. So I'm thrilled with the movies that came out. Again, knowing the odds, I would have, and knowing the selection, if I had an Oscar vote, I would have voted for Lady Bird for best original screenplay and put the Oscar puzzle theory to a better test. My number 6 on the year is Dunkirk. Best PG-13 war movie, one of the best suspense movies in a long time. Technical marvel, great score, tremendous cinematography. Another testament to the theatrical experience because it's my number 3 all-time best IMAX theater-going day.
Wow.
And I love this in the big screen. The shots with Tom Hardy in the air, just majestic, blew my mind.
Can't beat it.
Dropped my jaw. So this movie may have dipped a little bit, but no, folks, cinema is not dying. Jesus Christ.
You sure?
That's my
number
6. I've
heard a lot of people say otherwise.
after these theatrical experiences, my number 5 is Star Wars The Last Jedi. To me, it's undeniably good. We have multiple podcasts on that. I prefer this type of movie going over The Force Awakens, where it kind of gives you what you expect. This movie is a blockbuster that
totally was your number 3?
For a loop. That's my number 5.
Number 5, I'm sorry.
So Rian Johnson.
You can tell I'm very invested.
Star Wars The Last Jedi is my number 5. Number 4 is Get Out. No matter
number 4.
What? No, yeah, it's my number 4.
You,
I loved it.
You harlot.
It was in my top
5. You traitor.
It was in my top 5 all year. I told you it was at 5 all year. I loved it. It's a strong A minus.
Well, you can get out of this house.
I squirmed during the sunken place and with the social satire. I jumped at the scares. And of course, I laughed a lot. Little Rel's hysterical. The jokes structured into the script, and the satire screams at you. It's just a marvel.
Horror comedy.
Yeah, man, it's phenomenal. So, this would have been my number 1 in almost any year, but I have 3 movies that I gave A's to this year.
Interesting.
And to me, they're undeniably great films. I don't care if the Academy recognized them or not. My number 3 this year is Thor Ragnarok, which is perhaps the most enjoyable experience I've had in the theaters in a long, long time. I can't think more highly of how Disney and Marvel, they're developing their filmmakers. I loved Hunt for the Wilder People a couple years ago. Taika Waititi, I really like What We Do in the Shadows, the Flight of the Conchords guy, all growed up and making great movies. And this movie's hysterical. It's a masterpiece for blockbuster cinema in my mind. See it on as big a screen as you can if you can't rent it at home. And just, it's a great time. And you see where all the money goes. And I don't begrudge a movie because it's a blockbuster. Had to go with my gut. I had it up there all year. And it's my number 3. My number 2 is my obsession of 2017, Phantom Thread. Thoroughly well done and thought-provoking. Some of the best performance in this or any year. I cannot believe he made this story so cinematic. I love DDL. I love PTA. And after this movie, I also love Leslie Manville, Vicky Krieps, and yes, Mark Bridges. They do a phenomenal job. Phantom Thread is my number two.
That was that movie, as batshit crazy as it is, it was an unbelievable job on all facets, in all aspects, down to Daniel Day-Lewis becoming an actual seamstress and methoding the hell out of his last performance.
So this is going to be a somewhat of a surprise for people, but my number one movie is the best blend of cinema, and in my opinion, it was the most pleasant surprise I had going to the theaters. Maybe it's not the best movie, but it's my favorite movie, goddammit. And I love the music, the editing, the performances.
Boy.
I love the script. I love where the story took me. I love the moral that they had at the end of it. There's suspense, crazy suspense, and it's just my kind of cinema, that music video style. My number one of the year is Baby Driver.
Oh,
best chase sequences maybe ever. Best car chases in a long, long time. Fast and Furious has got nothing on this movie. In my opinion, it's a great theatrical experience. Yes, Kevin Spacey being in this movie kind of took it out of any awards contention, and I understand that. I totally get it, but I think people loved it when it came out. Some of people poo-pooed it, and maybe that it wasn't great, but it's very good. It got a mini backlash over the summer, but it's been my number one for the longest time. I give it a 94A, and it's still up there. Still up there as a 94A.
We got to get Ansel Elgort on the pod.
I thought he was very good.
He was. I'm not going to argue with that.
But
was Aiza Gonzalez.
The supporting cast was just so cool.
John Hamm's always awesome.
I can gush over it. I did in our very first episode.
Wow. So you had a wire-to-wire number one. Wire to Wire number one for also Mike. You want to run down your top 10 real quick?
Call Me By Your Name was my number 10. Blade Runner 2049 was my number 9. The Big Sick at 8. Lady Bird at 7. Dunkirk at 6. Star Wars The Last Jedi at 5. Get Out at 4. Thor Ragnarok at 3. Phantom Thread at 2. And number 1 this year for me was Baby Driver. So you finally get my taste profile. I went back and forth with some blockbusters and Academy movies. But that's my taste in movies.
Good Time for you.
Love Baby Driver. Good Time was number 12 or 13. Yeah. Very, very strong movie.
You know, I'm trying to decide.
I'm exhausted. I talked for a while.
I'm trying to decide friend. If we had a lot of the same movies, there's a mix. I don't know if we hit a lot of this. There's definitely some crossover, not a ton. My honorable mentions, Dunkirk was my number 11. It was the single most difficult movie to keep off this list.
Sure.
Maybe the highest degree of difficulty in any war movie ever pulled off. The Beguiled, I loved. Everybody wants to go nuts over these feminist statements, and then they miss the biggest feminist movies to me. Such a scene by Sophia Lillis in It, and The Beguiled, Nicole Kidman, what all those women do in that movie. And they want to go towards Wonder Woman, which is mansplaining awesome, the movie. It blows my mind, true. But regardless. The Marvel properties I kept off, Spider-Man Homecoming and Thor Ragnarok, they just missed the cut for me because they probably would have been on had I not seen Black Panther yet. To me, seeing Black Panther, you're like, that's a Marvel Oscar movie. I think these two just missed the cut. I know you'll probably disagree as you sit there shaking your head disappointedly at me. I'm sorry. Coco, again, I've made the point over and over. If it's not a Toy Story 3, it's going to feel like a disappointment. Coco kind of did. Not fair to Coco because it's a great movie. Doesn't make the top 10 for me. Florida Project, the dollar for dollar winner. If we were going best pound for pound movie, of
that
the
wins the MM Indie Spirits.
Yes, exactly. That one, if we're sponsored by IFC at any point in the future, I'll give Florida
they
Pride
did a great job
picture.
With that whole broadcast, by the way. Even the commercials were entertaining.
You got some love from IFC.
I did.
Official IFC
I meant it. I don't just brown nose wherever. I make sure that I actually care
you
about it.
You choose your brown nosing.
Yes. My nose is going to smell like poop. He's going to do it for a reason.
It was probably my highest rated movie back over the summer. I wanted to put it in the top 10. I just couldn't do it.
It just edged out for me, too. Yeah, I hear you.
I loved it.
I hear you.
Number 10 for me, the Lego Batman movie. It was fucking fun. Anybody that listens to our retrospectives, when we do our Perfecting Perfection, our year in review, I always like to give my last spot out to a kind of movie that I know would never get any kind of serious consideration. The Lego Batman movie holds up well. It's not a blockbuster, even though it kind of has that feel. It's got an all-star cast. It's an animated feature. It was fun. I actually would have put it higher than Coco as far as animated features go, but it was certainly told a fun story. Probably the best Batman movie since Christian Bale was donning the costume. Maybe since he did it for the second time. I don't know. It's an argument to be made. That was my number 10. My number 9, I, Tonya. I've said a lot about this movie in the past. I'm very impressed with the way the story was told, and whether or not the story was even real is something to be considered and left you guessing. Again, when I look back at this year's Best Actress, Best Leading Actress category, the first scenes that come to mind all involve Margot Robbie, one with her in a shotgun and one with her in a mirror.
No question.
My number 8 movie was, again, you had it as well in your top 10, Star Wars The Last Jedi. Love the circumvention of convention that Rian Johnson did. You had him up for your best director as well.
We saw it together.
We did see it together. Again, me and you holding hands, leaving the theater was a big impression left on me.
There's nowhere else to put our hands.
It was a small theater.
I'm in love with these leather seats right now, by the way.
Yes.
More theaters, please
do
that.
Comfortable. Number 7, The Big Sick. Big fan of The Big Sick. Kumail Nanjiani, Emily V. Gordon, that supporting cast, that story. Yeah.
That was your number one at the summer.
It was.
Pod.
That was my number one over the summer, and I had to rejigger and move it around. I don't know why I said rejigger. It just came into my mind. Gonna stick with it. Rejigger. Number 6, Phantom Thread for me. Off the wall, batshit crazy story. But like we said in our best picture category,
I knew we were
review,
friends for a reason.
We leave that theater, and you're like, oh, I want a little more of that. I want to scope that out again. Make sure I didn't miss anything.
Yeah.
Big theme about poison mushrooms this year. I thought of this last night before I went to sleep. Phantom Thread, poison mushrooms. I guess that's a spoiler, but I'm making a point here. The Beguiled, poison mushrooms.
Yeah.
The period pieces, both with long dresses. All right.
These directors watch a lot of cooking shows,
listen,
and then their
brains.
I'm just going
to bring that to the table. You guys do with it what you want. Just pointing that out. Maybe you're having a fight with your loved one at home. Maybe you don't eat the mushrooms. That's all I'm saying. You pass on the sautéed mushrooms. My number five, we're in my top five now. Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig. She just missed the cut because I think this year was so loaded with Best Director nominees for me. She was my first honorable mention. I just forgot to rewrite it back in because I'm a fool. But what she did in this coming-of-age story, I don't have to repeat all those beats that we said time and again.
Mm.
My number four was Okja. Movie made me goddamn emotional.
You always love this movie. Yes,
it's a great movie.
I'm happy that Bong Joon-ho is getting some recognition. I love him as a filmmaker.
Can never eat bacon again. If you have not seen Okja, make sure you are emotionally and mentally prepared for seeing Okja, because it's an ordeal. It does stuff with your emotions. It's like Million Dollar Baby in a way. I don't know if it is.
There's some way out there that it's similar.
I loved Okja.
They're both movies.
I really think Okja was, it walks the line between being like a fairy tale kids creature feature and a modern twist on Upton Sinclair's The Jungle.
Oh my God.
It's all about the meatpacking industry and the using of the speedy uses of resources and animal cruelty and stuff like that. As an owner of, I had two dogs, it was just sad. It made me,
it's a timely
emotional
movie.
Yeah, it was timely. Fuck you. Don't like Okja. You fuck you. My number three was three. Three billboards. My number two is Mother. The correlation. The fact that everyone was so mad about this movie because they didn't get it angers me. And then when they did get it, the score started going up on IMDb and on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
That means something. That means that had you gone in with a clear head, or if you were able to pick up what Aronofsky was playing on, and there's a very specific thread that he's playing on throughout that movie, you would have enjoyed it.
He doesn't hold back.
No! Yes, there's some gratuitous scenes in there that are a little too much. If you're not ready for them, they can sicken you. Look, yes, but it's explosive filmmaking. It's supposed to be in your face. It's making this grand parallel, this grand statement. Jennifer Lawrence kills it. Javier Bardem kills it. The ending literally brings everything full circle.
You're on the record of loving Mulholland Drive back in our...
That's my favorite movie of all time.
Filmy feud. So, yeah, I mean, this is a mind bender in a similar way. We've described it otherwise in other pods as mind fucks.
Yeah, that's about right.
It's one of those.
My number one, it's Get Out. It should have won Best Picture. I was rooting for a Best Picture at the Oscars. I am just so convinced that you can say what you want about me having Okja high, having Mother high, Star Wars on the list. I am convinced that if we look back 10 to 20 years,
yeah,
Get Out is going to be the film that everyone remembers from this year. It's the point that we made first on this pod. The Ringer made it soon after us, and we're pointing it out. Bill Simmons' crew has the whole same idea. I am just thoroughly convinced that if 2017 is the social justice landmark event that it is poised to be, if we keep progressing as a society, if equal pay and equal rights are still, and civil protections are still a big deal moving forward, if the sexual harassment stuff is a big deal moving forward, it all started here in this year of 2017. And if that's how 2017 is viewed historically, the biggest stories were the sex assault and the racial issues. This one walks that line so beautifully, beloved by everyone. I don't know what the Academy was in love with a fish man more for. Nonetheless.
Half measures.
Yeah, it should have been Get Out. Get Out's my Best Picture of the year, and the Mike and Oscar Best Picture winner of 2017 for Mike Munn.
Can't argue with that list. There's a lot of movies I like there as well. So this is not really the argue with each other pod. We're both kind of mentioning our favorites, our top 10. So take those with a grain of salt, or if you like us, go and watch some more movies.
Mine were right. That's it. That's the Mike and Oscars.
Yeah.
That's 2017. We're putting a pin in it. We're putting it on the shelf. It's all neatly wrapped up. The ones that should have won, as opposed to the ones that did.
I'm doing air quotes now, but a lot of work was put into that. our brains are spaced, huh?
Fried. It was a hell of a sprint. And this is kind of what we hope that the November, December through award season would be. I think we're kind of proud of ourselves, and we should be pat ourselves
on
the back.
Great job, buddy.
Likewise, we got a lot more to come. Like we said it at the top, we got a lot of stuff coming. Be on the lookout for our 2018 year in preview, our early Oscar predictions there, our March Madness pod that's coming up on basketball-centric films.
Hoops movies.
Back to film Oscar retrospectives. We're going to do movie event pods, might be doing Isle of Dogs, might be doing Unsane, definitely going to be doing something with the Avengers.
Yes, sir.
I almost said Age of Ultron. Good God. That's how fried my brain is. Almost
going to be doing the something Affinity with... War, right?
Yes, that's it.
They all love each other, too.
Purple gosh. Joss Whedon. Coming for all your stones.
He's not Josh Brolin.
No, it's Josh Whedon. That first look at Thanos when he stepped out and he was that pale purple.
Josh Whedon looks like that guy?
That was purple Joss Whedon. That was an homage saying, thanks for getting this all started. Wow. You're Thanos.
Here, I thought you were just being old and forgetting names.
That too. yeah, stick around, guys. We're hoping that you're enjoying it. We're enjoying interacting with you, and we hope you enjoyed the first edition of the Mike, Mike, and Oscars.
Yeah, I got nothing left, man. Yeah, that was awesome.
We're on empty. It's been a long run.
That was fun.
We're like Jackson Brown, running on empty.
Just social media.
Yeah, I guess. We are Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter sphere. We are Mike, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Reddit, and we have Mike, Mike, and Oscar.com in the pipeline, and now that we have some downtime, we can finally get some work done on it and turn it into an actual thing.
I hope a March launch. That's all what right. I hope.
It's also Mike's baby, so you can yell at me about Jennifer Lawrence being the best actress of 2017. Yell at also Mike.
If you don't like the website.
Yeah, yell at Mike about the website that's coming up. Otherwise, we'd love hearing from you guys. We want to keep this train rolling. We're going to be in this for the long haul, so keep on replying to us, hitting us back. Reality does suck, so keep watching movies with us.
That's a slogan.
Yeah, we're done.
We're done, man. 2017 in the books.
Let's do it again in 2018.
Sounds good to me.
Later, guys.
See ya.